It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out! It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to Continued Success, a Phillies podcast celebrating the fandom. I don't know. I started that thought with no end in sight. So I apologize for getting you all hyped up and then leaving you alone there, dangling off the edge of a cliff. This is a Phillies podcast. We're going to talk today about the 2009 World Series. I am Justin Clue of Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Good morning.
Good morning.
Liz. There's a chill in the air. The World Series is over. A nation completely unified. All our problems behind us by the Nationals becoming World Series champions. Phillies already making moves. I'm mostly worried here that yesterday the Phillies claimed a reliever named Robert Stock from the Padres. And I said, oh, the Phillies just keep looking for value in the margins. And I'm worried people aren't understanding that this is a stock market pun. Joke? Is that not registering with people? Is everyone?
I'll say this. It took me a minute.
Is everyone not getting that? I'm a little worried.
Yeah, right. Only because when someone says value at the margins, we all have like terror flashbacks of Gabe mm-hmm. Kapler. So,
my bad. Sorry, everyone. I know expectations are high, and I didn't meet them. But yeah, the World Series is over. Baseball is behind us. And, you know, I can't shake this feeling. Yes, there's always that weird sadness. They have one of those like new obnoxious words that was invented to describe the feeling you get when you walk through somewhere that typically has a lot of people in it but is now empty, or like the feeling of a party being over. Like there's, you know, one of those words. I don't know what it is or how to pronounce it, but just imagine I'm using that word now, because that accurately sums up how this feels at the end of baseball season. I also feel kind of liberated, frankly. Feels lighter, you know? Feels like there's less to worry about or think about. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of activity in the months and weeks ahead, but you know, just for now, letting people bask in the closure of another baseball season, regardless of how it ended, it's kind of nice.
Yeah. We need it. I mean, people say, like, I miss baseball, and it's true, but, like, the missing baseball is kind of part of it. You have to miss it, you know? You should have to miss it in order for it to come back, in order for it to be meaningful when it returns. Mm. This just year-long baseball, I think I'd toss myself onto some sharpened sticks.
Yes. Yeah, we all know where the sharpened stick pit is, in case we need to, you know, get down there. You know what I mean? And... And
happy podcast, everyone.
Baseball hasn't how would you grade this baseball season, this 2019? Give it like a, I don't know, like a B minus. That's a coward's
about
way out.
Right. I think overall with everyone it's a B minus. I mean, there are a lot of sucky things, there are a lot of stupid things, but the Astros didn't win, so I can't possibly give it anything lower than like a C.
That was nice. That was kind of a twist ending. I appreciated that.
Oh, yeah, because at no point, literally until the final out, did I was waiting. I'm like, the Astros are going to hit a 5-run home run here. This is what's going to happen. And Major League Baseball is going to allow it because it's the Astros. And then they'll just win the World Series and we'll all have to live with it.
Yeah. I honestly, it was kind of nice because it wasn't totally predictable. You know, and you know, excuse me, as terrible as things got there, narratively by the end, we certainly didn't stop talking about what was going on for the entire series. You know, it was, I'm not trying to say that, you know, things were bad, but it's good. This is like the Darren Ruffel tweet of, this is terrible, but it's tremendous content. Like, no, not quite that. I wouldn't go that far. But as a season on the whole, regular season, yeah, okay. What I can remember was all right. But
it's
baseball's
a long season. It's 162 games. I barely remember 4 days ago. So, you know. How are we supposed to grade the whole season when it's so freaking long?
I think the point I was trying to make was baseball's got a lot of problems, and I think every one of them found a way to be represented during the World Series, and that was kind of gratifying in a way as someone who struggles to look past those problems to enjoy baseball as a sport again. It was gratifying to have a national conversation about pretty much each and every issue facing baseball right now, whether it was the ball is different again, or, you know, everyone is sexist, everyone is hateful, there's this culture that's permeated all of the sport that's really damaging in a way people don't realize yet. The umpires, you know, what's going on in their heads? A little concerning, couple of red flags there. So just to have everyone
about that,
everyone collectively discussing issues like this was gratifying in a way, while the issues themselves were once again demoralizing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad it's over. I'm mm-hmm. usually, at this point in the season, I'm like, all right, I'm like, by the time the Phillies season is over, I mean, as it has been for the past 7 years, by the time we get to the end, I'm just sort of beaten down, you know, and it's been different the past 2 years, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's better, because I would, you know, you get beaten down after watching a whole season of them just lose and lose and lose. You know, this time it was, you get beaten down after a season of people saying, we're about to win, things are about to change. Just stay tuned, we're going to do it. Keep watching. Uh-huh. Nope, don't go anywhere. You know, and then they just continue to disappoint you. And so it's a different type of beaten down. That doesn't mean it's better. So by this point in the season, I'm usually like, I'm ready to watch football on Thursday night. I'm ready to watch, you know, 4 days of Law and Order reruns. I'm ready to not think about baseball for a little while. I'm ready to miss it.
Big Thursday night football advocate, are you?
I'll tell you this much. The slate for Thursday night football this season looks better. Those matchups are better than Monday night football, which is, take a look at what's left and what we've watched. It's fucking garbage. The NFL schedulers are morons, because last night's matchup was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, right. Last night was Thursday. That's already it's difficult to tell what day is what without baseball.
Is it?
It's got a grounding aspect for me that I know. I'm just like, well, it's the evening. What happens now? The sun has set. We got falling back.
Oh, no.
This weekend, time-wise, the world will be swept up in darkness at earlier and earlier hours. Liz, I mean, we're in it now. It is fall. It is
nearly winter. There's really no fall left.
Yeah, it's wow. We've really pushed forward, and all, you know, the World Series ending typically, it's a reminder for me that, oh right, we're at this point in the calendar now. You kind of emerge from baseball season like, oh, the holidays. We have the holidays now.
Yep. Now it's,
oh my god.
Yeah, everyone start planning your Christmas gifts for everyone else. I'm just like, God, I just finished planning a wedding. I really don't want to have to jump back into making 8,000 lists, but I guess I have to.
My question, I suppose, is just this then. Here we are sitting at the end of the 2019 baseball season. The World Series is over, was what it was. The Nationals won. I mean, what we were grading the regular season. Yeah, I'm going to say a B-. I think you're about the same. World Series, probably a little, I'd give it like a, maybe like a B+, I think, based on what we're saying. But yeah. Where do you sit on the Nationals at this point? Like, I know it's going to change once they play, the first time they play the Phillies, or the next time you see something about the Nationals and Bryce Harper in the World Series, that, you know, that your any positive feelings may be degraded a little bit by commentary of that nature. But, like, where do you sit on the Nationals right now as World Series champions? I'm not as devastated as I, you know, a year ago would have said I would be if the Nationals won the World Series. I'm not, you know, it was the better of the two alternatives. This was the more favorable option. They have a lot of likable players. Really, it's not the players I have a problem with, I don't mm-hmm. think, on the Nationals, which is really nice.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes. I mean, I'm not that devastated, though. I'm really excited to get back to hating them and their fans. Like, I'm super thrilled. I'm already halfway there. So, like, it was nice watching them win, watching their fandom become a fandom. Like, I know you said, you know, it's the World Series, you know, on a hit in season last week. Why wouldn't they show up? I'm like, because they traditionally have not. They weren't, the stadium wasn't filled for the wild card game.
Right.
So, you know, it's the wild card game and they've been burned before and I can kind of get that. But, you know, watching them sort of become a real fan base is kind of what this really was. And I enjoyed that. Watching the players celebrate, I enjoyed. And now it's like 24 hours later, I'm like, you know, I think I'm kind of over it. I'm glad they won. The shark stuff was cute. I'm absolutely buying one of those World Series champion shirts with the happy smiling shark holding the trophy. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, it's amazing. And because Gerardo Parra is the one that started it, they also have another one where the shark is wearing the Gerardo Parra sunglasses and holding the trophy. Yeah, it's nauseatingly cute. I'm going to have to own one of those shirts. And yeah, I mean, I'm happy for them. They're just about to cross over into intolerable for fans of any other NL East team. Like, it's one thing I like about the World Series is that I can forget that I'm a Phillies fan and just pick a team to root for. I have a hard time watching baseball without having a rooting interest. So I usually pick a team, you know, and in the World Series, it was pick from two terrible choices for you personally. So picking the Nationals wasn't hard, but, you know, they're still the Nationals, and I'm still racked with dislike for the entire concept of them.
Yeah, and that was something that emerged here, too. We talked about that something you have been saying for years became a national conversation as well. But as far as the Nationals go, yeah, you're right about the fan base really coming into its own. A lot of Nationals fans were kind of born during this World Series, whether it's like an actual child who will get swept up in a city or like a region getting to the World Series and you know, being genuinely excited about it because it's the first time and all that stuff. And that's, you know, that's great. Or like the guy who was like, oh, I've been a Nationals fan since yesterday. Like, that's also fine. You know? Yeah. Also cool. So that component is great. It just boils down to like one talking point that's easily refutable. It involves the Phillies. And if you just ignore that, then this was, you know, it's pretty cool. I mean, if the Mets won the World Series. Sorry. Sorry. That's, I think reality blinked out there for a second.
I heard like a giant sucking noise as the universe tried to prevent us from thinking about this.
Yeah.
I mean, when they were
file not found.
When they were close to the World Series, I have friends who were Mets fans. And when they were close to the World Series, like, again, watching a fan base sort of come alive, because efforts like, oh, bandwagon fans suck. I'm like, the point of a World Series is to inspire fans to root for them and for them to reap the rewards of that over the next however many years with the loyalty that this incredible run has inspired. And so it was fun watching it. Like, Mets fans are still Mets fans, but watching them get excited about it, like, it happens every year. There's a fun and an innocence and a real, just like it's contagious to sort of watch them to want to get involved. Like, I love watching people be happy about the World Series. I love that. Watching the players celebrate, watching fans celebrate. And it's been kind of refreshing that it's been like, you know, there hasn't been any, you know, my grandmother has waited for this since 1934. Like, no, there's no one alive from the last time the Nationals or a Washington team won a World Series. I love watching it. And then I remember, oh, the Phillies, the Phillies still exist and are not here. Like, suddenly, like, right after, it's like there's like a period of time where I could be really happy, and then it just starts to, the bar starts to very slowly go down until I'm at zero, and I'm just like, fuck these guys. I'm tired of their happiness.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, my grandma's been away. There's the part that always resonates with me from that famous Paul Hagen column after the Phillies won the World Series was describing people who were buried in their Eagles sweatshirts who never got to see the day a Phillies team actually won a World Series. Like that, yeah, that's part of your local sports culture. Like that's a big part. And while the Nationals may not have a long, deep history in Washington at the moment, they told some of that story. You know, we watched that happen. It's not going to matter that much to us because we're not from there. We're outsiders kind of watching them build their legacy. But like this will be, you know, pretty much the main chapter of the book on Washington baseball for now.
This is the most significant thing to happen to them since drafting Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper. Mm-hmm. This is the most significant thing to happen in their entire existence. Making it to the World Series was the most significant thing to happen. Making it to the NLCS, which they hadn't before. Like everything that they've done at all, actually, like winning the wild card and then actually winning a playoff series, that was all. These are all new things that they've never done before. So it is kind of neat to watch, to be like, we're actually witnessing the birth of a real franchise now. They're like a real grown-up franchise. They've won things. Soon their fans will be embittered, just like us.
And I'll take that over another Giants-Cardinals NLCS any day of the week. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like we got the same four teams recycled in there for a couple of years, and it's time to see some new, you know, Nationals seem like they probably should have been in the mix starting like 6 years ago, and they just didn't. But, you know, having some new faces in there is always healthy, and I'll take that, you know, 10 times out of 10 than watching another, you know, having come up as a baseball fan in the, you know, in the 90s and watching the Yankees get to the World Series like 12 times in a row was just like, what am I supposed to like get excited about here? I hate them. They're always in it. They always win. Like, so it always is healthy to get some new blood in there. And the Nationals are that new blood. Now, that being said, if the Braves had made it to the World Series, that would have been utterly, utterly disgusting.
Oh, no. Yeah, I would not have been able to support them. Or that, or any of their fans, or anything. I, it's weird how there's like the Braves are the one team I can never support in the NL East. Like if the Marlins had made it, I would have been able to find a way to be like, yeah, because the Marlins are, you know, sad failures constantly. If they actually made it this far, I'd be like, yes,
Marlins. The Marlins have fun colors. I can get behind them.
You know, and it was pretty easy to get behind the Nationals. Like, as a 36-year-old woman, seeing 35-year-old Max Scherzer on the mound, a whole, you know, Howie Kendrick is 35, I think. Adam Eaton is older. Like, they're one of the oldest teams in baseball this year, which no
Zimmerman.
One realized. Yeah, no one realized that until they started to actually... You know, when they lost players and had to replace guys. Like, I feel like Gerardo Parra has been around since, like, the 90s somehow. I don't know why. I don't think that's true. But it was really refreshing to see older players sort of, excuse me, really flourish in the World Series and in the playoffs. It made me feel good. Like, me, I have something still to contribute to society.
There's... That component, as well as the youth that was on display, was also I felt like seeing the two next to each other. I mean, every team has older players and younger players, but on the Nationals, it just seemed so dramatic in that they still had the guy that was their first draft pick ever, and he was still hitting home runs in the postseason. But then they also had, you know, this 20-year-old who was like also killing the baseball about the same pace. And, you know, it kind of scares you. As a team that's got to play them 19 times in a season, they have a great mix there. And it's going to change a little bit, you know, moving forward. Who knows what's going to happen with Anthony Rendon? Who knows what's going to happen with Steven Strasburg? Who knows if the Nationals are going to become the kind of team that has elite talent, watches it grow, and then watches it walk away. But, you know, it would be hilarious if the Phillies just kept picking up this won't happen. But like if the Phillies just kept picking up in free agency all of the key figures of Nationals postseason runs, the way the Nationals thought they were like owning the Phillies by picking up Brad Lidge, Matt Stairs, Jason Worth. Obviously. They got Eric Bruntlett at one point, though I don't think that was a strategic blow.
Remember all those days, my God.
But they were picking up our World Series heroes, and there was at least a little bit of a PR flavor to that, as we know for a fact from Brad Lidge speaking to me at a Saber conference. This is on video, folks. That there was a little bit of an attempt to be like, oh, we're trying to make the Phillies look bad. You should like try to own the Phillies. And he was like, I can't say that.
I'm a decent, normal human. I don't know what you're trying to make me do here.
It would be great if the Phillies just picked up like these far like cornerstones of the Nationals rather than just like the guy who hit a home run or the guy who like saved all those games.
Howie Kendrick, you know, and Struble Cabrera back on the Phillies again.
We showed you, Nationals. Take that. Yeah.
My favorite moment of all the player celebrations was Max Scherzer and Anibal Sanchez, who were teammates on the Tigers. The last two members of that Tigers rotation from 2012, I believe, that won. Now all five of them have won World Series rings. They were the last two. And they're on the field, and they hug, and they're sobbing. They embrace, and Anibal Sanchez says, we finally won one. Mm. We finally won one. I have that up in my browser, the video. It is so lovely. It's just one of those great moments, because that Tigers team, like, I really feel for Tigers and Rangers fans, because both their teams came within, the Rangers came within one pitch of winning the World Series and didn't make it. They had to play game seven after, I think, a game six walk-off, and they lost. You know, the Tigers were so close with that, with those great teams, and didn't make it. I feel for those fans, and I felt for, you know, Max Scherzer. And, you know, now they have a World Series, and it was so nice to see them so happy, and to see like they'd finally sort of righted a wrong in their own pasts.
Yeah, and that's a moment where, like, you know, we sit here and talk about mostly in regards to players, what team they're on, and that's a moment where those two guys didn't give a shit what team they were on, and yeah, as an appreciator of that moment, like, neither do you watching that, and that's kind of like transcending our petty little grievances with teams, or, you know, legitimate grievances with entire franchises. In the case of the Nationals, it's largely petty. But yeah, to be able to transcend that in a moment like that is, yeah, that's beautiful. You can play a whole season just to get to that moment. Like, that tells you a lot. So, all right.
They're going to be insufferable next year.
Yeah.
And then their fans, they're going to be fucking insufferable. Let's everyone prepare yourselves for it right now. They're going to be really bad. And to a certain extent, we're all just going to have to take it, because we would be the same way. We'd be rubbing it in their faces. We'd be constantly talking about it, waving our banners in their faces every time they came to Citizens Bank Park.
What do you mean we would be? We bought this. We have incurred this.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
goodness.
True. You're right. I assumed that our sins from a decade ago had been somehow washed away somewhat. That is not true.
We were playing with house money. You know, we went into their stadium, waved signs, took it over.
Oh, man.
Unabashedly referred to it as Citizens Bank South. You know, we took. There were no punches pulled. Like, we walked around like we own the place. And you know what? We'll do it again.
Yeah, we will. If given the chance, we'll do it again. But this coming season, Nationals fans, because as you said, many were born. Like, bandwagon fans, everyone needs to shut up about how bad bandwagon fans are. They are the point of baseball. That's how new fans are born. New fans are born from championships, and so there's going to be a lot of them, and they will come to Philadelphia, and they will invade our stadium. We need to accept it. We can yell at them. We also just have to take it. This is how it goes when a team in the division wins a World Series, which is why I desperately wanted it to be the Dodgers, so we didn't have to deal with it, because who cares if the Dodgers win?
Well, you know, that all starts with the team giving you some ammo to feel confident about, which is by making themselves better and then winning baseball games. So hopefully that is the next two steps of this process. But, you know, speaking of World Series creating new fans, I know you and I saw maybe not the creation, but certainly the solidification of our fandom watching this Phillies team from 2009 go back to the World Series. So we're going to talk about that right after we come back from this break. Well, Liz, 2009 World Series. This was, you know, hey, we did this before. We knew how this, we had the instructions memorized. We knew how to go to the World Series. The Phillies were back in the World Series. October 28th was game one, late October. The latest start, I believe, in World Series history, October 28th. This World Series took place mostly in November.
I do have a vague memory of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How strange. I wonder why it was so late.
Yeah. It's interesting. It was definitely a November classic, certainly more than an October one. And yeah, I mean, well, we're going to start with game one, but you know, Phillies, Yankees, it was sort of think of this rivalry. It's not historic rivalry. Maybe to people who watched the 1915 World Series?
Like, oh, God.
But, I mean, you know, we wanted the Yankees. In a way, it was almost like, yes, we won the World Series. No, there's the Red Sox and Phillies in 1915. In a way, we wanted the Yankees because, all right, look, we won the World Series in 2008. It was 1950. I always get those confused. 1950 World Series when the Phillies and Yankees played. We got to the World Series. We got to the playoffs. All right, 2007. Miracle run, made it to the playoffs. Got swept out by the Rockies. Went back to the playoffs the next year. Won the World Series. How do we capitalize on this? Well, we beat the Rays in the World Series. And as we talked about on this podcast, there was a better Red Sox team that would have posed a larger challenge to the Phillies in the World Series that year. So, you know, that doesn't take anything away from the World Series. It does just create another path that that time could have traveled down, and we'd be talking about a different situation potentially. So when you think about how do we take this to the next level when we've already won the World Series of baseball, do you think you got to beat the Yankees? And it just so happened that the Yankees were having a period of success. You know, this was a good Yankees team. It wasn't one of those weird decades where it was like the Yankees are middling at best and, you know, they're having managerial struggles and blah, blah, blah. This was another good Yankees team comprised of a ton of all-stars. They were buying talent. I don't know how much talent was, you know, obviously Derek Jeter was around and that's, you know, one of their homegrown stories. But like what there was as far as like talent that they developed. Brett Gardner, is he a...
Oh, God, he was on the team this year. He had the,
right,
he,
right?
He's also a 36-year-old, 35-year-old who had the best year of his entire career this past season.
Liz, I don't know who's been telling you that people in their mid-30s are going to be trucked off to a field and left there, but I got to tell you, it is not as old an age, I promise. It is. Roy Halladay retired at 36, and I remember thinking he's got his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah, he has his whole life ahead of him, but in baseball, we've been told for, I'm going to say the last 5 years, that if you are older than about 31, you are a waste of space in baseball.
That's fair.
Like, which is why it was so gratifying. Like, Justin Verlander is older than me. Older than me. And pitched in the World Series. Like, I find that, like, I'm realizing I'm watching the tail end of players who are my age contribute substantively to baseball, so I'm trying to enjoy it. I will continue to mention it, and you cannot stop me.
Totally fine. I'm not trying to just, argue with you.
You're just
I'm
trying to make sure I know
it's okay.
That I won't be taken to a home in the next 6 months sometime, and I appreciate that.
Get her, fellas. We distracted her. Get that butterfly net. Yeah, so yes, this was a Yankees team that was like, okay, we beat the Rays, we won the World Series. Now, you know, we're untouchable. Now who can't we beat? Let's take the Yankees. We'll take the Yankees in the World Series.
Ugh, the confidence. Remember those days? We're like, yeah, bring on the best, historically best franchise in all of baseball.
Yeah, let's bring them on. And that's exactly what the Phillies were getting in this World Series. You know, I don't know if you remember game one of the 2009 World Series, Liz, but it did nothing to quell that confidence. I remember this because I'm living, I believe, on North Broad Street at the time, and riding my bike over to a friend's house that was closer to Old City. And, you know, it was around Halloween, so there was a lot of Halloween parties going on. I remember being somewhere for one of these games and then going directly to a Halloween party and being like, I'm not wearing a costume, but I'm, like, decked out in Phillies gear. So I'm, like, kind of, where people just assumed I was in costume as the person on the back of my jersey, which, let's face it, was probably Shane Victorino. And yeah, but I remember like riding over to my friend's house to watch this game and just sitting there on the couch watching Cliff Lee come out and just dominate this Yankees lineup and being like, you know, trying to stop myself from being as excited as I felt myself getting because of how well things were going. Every time A-Rod would swing and miss, every time oh my God, isn't that terrible? Who was the MVP? Hideki
Matsui.
It was Matsui. Okay. Every time he would strike out, I was like, oh my gosh. And then when Jeter would strike out, it was just like, oh, okay. So this is like real.
So they're doing this is happening.
Jeter's got the favor of the gods behind him. If he's striking out his charmed existence, then like this is serious. And that's exactly what happened in that game. You saw a Cliff Lee come out and pitch a game that was the most confident I've ever felt about a World Series. Of course, you know, given what happened, that's even made even more humorous. But yeah, he threw one of the best World Series starts I've ever seen. You know, I always forget that he gave up a run in the bottom of the ninth there, but the Phillies were up 6-0 at that point. The offense came through for him. He was going up against CC Sabathia. It was a great pitching matchup. Sabathia goes 7 innings, allows 4 hits, and then 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. But it wound up, you know, the Yankees had to go into their bullpen. They wound up using 5 different relievers to close out the game. Meanwhile, Cliff Lee goes...
Girardi, everyone.
Cliff Lee goes the distance. 9 innings, 6 hits, 1 run, 10 strikeouts. Faces 32 batters. Obviously, he's mostly remembered the nonchalant catch of the pop-up, the behind the back fielding of that ground, that comebacker that came right back to the mound, and Tim McCarver's little like sound that he made when Cliff Lee fielded it. That was the moment where you're like, all right, if they don't win this game, then like this has been set up that they will win this game. Like narratively, they looked unstoppable. Like in that one moment, in that 1 9-inning segment of time, Cliff Lee was an unstoppable force, and it was incredible to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the whole season, of course, but this game, I think, is why people were so distressed, so distressed when the Phillies pulled off that 3-way trade, which we will talk about soon. But I think that's why people were so upset when he left, because they remember, they had this image of him in their head. He's like, why would you get rid of literally the best pitcher who has ever lived? Because that's who he looked like. 9 innings in the World Series. In the World Series, on the biggest stage, he went 9 innings and did, you know, that fielding magic. Yeah, it was just so confidence building. Like, I felt like it was ordained. I felt like this was happening. Like, how could they lose? This was Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Cliff Lee. Pedro Martinez was on the team.
Pedro, and he had to play the Yankees.
And he had to play the Yankees. Like, it felt like this was what was supposed to happen. And then it did not happen.
Well, I'm glad you used the word ordained, because obviously the events surrounding this World Series were quite notable. The New York Post cover was of Shane Victorino wearing a tutu, which that was the age we were living in at that time.
Let's not pretend that the New York Post wouldn't do the same thing today.
Oh, yeah.
It's the New York Post. They just haven't done it because they're waiting for the right opportunity.
Mm-hmm. But there were plenty of stories in the Inquirer about Phillies fans and going to New York and their reception in New York and what was going on in the area. And yeah, you know, the description by Kristen Graham in the Inquirer was basically like, yeah, before the game, it was actually pretty cordial. People were like, hey, you know, have a good series, blah, blah, blah. But like immediately after first pitch, people were screaming, Phillies suck, at anybody wearing a Phillies jersey. And then Raul Ibanez hit an RBI that knocked in a couple of runs. And there were a ton of Phillies fans in this one particular section at Yankee Stadium, and they were like, oh, let's go Phillies, and somebody yelled, shut the fuck up.
I feel like the reason why we hate those fans so much is because we see ourselves in them. Let's not pretend that Phillies fans would not and did not like. I do love the Phillies fans that ventured into old Yankee Stadium. And I'm like, I'm going to wear my Phillies gear during the World Series at Yankee Stadium, knowing full well that I may never make it out alive.
It is a Philadelphia-New York World Series. If no one was told to shut the fuck up during this series, I wouldn't have believed that they were actually playing it. I was like, oh, so this is like a simulation with the with the obscenities turned off? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
This is a video game, clearly.
You could have bet a lot of money that you would hear an audible shut the fuck up in the first nine innings. In the first three innings of this game. The first inning of this game.
The first inning of this game, yeah.
Philadelphia people going to New York to be obnoxious in New York, where the people are also obnoxious. Like, come on,
we
man.
We are the fan bases that go to other places to be obnoxious. Like, with this close second, like, Mets fans are there, but they're also New York fans. Like, this is what we do.
We talk about seeing some new blood in the postseason and get to the World Series and everything. But, you know, every couple of years, I think at least once a decade, we should get one of these purely bullshit East Coast World Series, yes, where it's just the worst, loudest, coldest, most miserable people going up against each other to be like, I'm not mad, you're mad, no, you're mad, no, you're mad. And then they're just like swinging on each other. You know what? We're not mad to hear someone, a Yankees fan, tell a Phillies fan to shut the fuck up. We're not mad because he said it. We're mad because we're not also there to be like, no, you shut the fuck up. We're like reading it later. So that's it. Yeah. After the fact, it's like, that argument's over and I didn't get to tell that guy to shut the fuck up. Now I'm pissed.
Now I'm going to put on my jersey and head down to New York so I can make sure I tell someone else to shut the fuck up before the next game.
Hey, speaking of jerseys, there was obviously a pregame ceremony and before game one at Yankee Stadium. A West Point cadet named Chris Grill from Upper Darby was standing on the field. And before the squad, you know, they're all wearing their military regalia. And before he left the field, he like kind of ripped his coat open kind of Superman style to reveal a red pinstripe Phillies jersey underneath to the Yankees fans. Just fucking sick. And
so great.
In and around Philadelphia, do you remember the Body Worlds exhibit at the Franklin Institute?
I do. I went to see it.
I forgot that this was an issue of controversy. This is where like real human corpses without the skin on, mm-hmm, I believe, were displayed.
It
to
was
show,
weird.
You know, it was crazy. And they actually put one of Jason Worth's game-used bats in the hands of one of these corpses stripped of human flesh.
You know, and
posed it as a baseball playing specimen.
Oh my god!
In the Body World exhibit.
It's so just treating a human corpse, a preserved human corpse, like a mannequin. It's a little different than what they did in Washington this week, which was put, I think, Nationals like a baseball uniform on one at the Air and Space Museum on one of the, you know, big spacesuits. Mm-hmm. They put like Nationals gear on it, which was really adorable because it was not a human corpse, a preserved human corpse.
That's so adorable. Would you desecrate a corpse for your team to get to the World Series?
That is how epic and hardcore Philadelphia is about sports. If there had been an opportunity for someone to do that for the Eagles a few years ago when they were in the Super Bowl, they would have, but unfortunately, I don't believe there are any human corpse exhibits, at least outside of the Mutter Museum.
Bummer.
The Mutter Museum doesn't, or Mutter Museum, whichever, why they don't get involved in all of these sports events is beyond me, considering they have, like, preserved heads and, like, dried body parts everywhere.
It sounds it's everything to do with sports. All those things you just mentioned. Seamless transition.
Why not just put a baseball hat on one of the severed heads? Is what I'm saying.
I think that would be a charming addition to the museum.
This entire segment is all for our friend Cole.
I do want to say, I think referring to this as desecration of a corpse is exactly what they were trying to fight against at the time, I would imagine, given why it was a controversy. So classifying it as that, I think, is not correct, but still, at the same time, using...
They were fighting against it because people were saying, hey, this is a human person. This is like, this used to be a live person.
But if you dedicated your body to that, which I'm assuming people did, they didn't just like grave rob.
I think that's part of the issue is that there was quite, I feel like there might have been a question of whether or not the former people actually willed their bodies to science for this.
if I dedicated my body to science and this is what it was used for, awesome.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then if I were in that museum as a dead body when the Phillies went to the World Series and they were like, which of these dead bodies should we put Jason Wirth's bat in the hands of and pose in a celebratory manner of the World Series? Whatever twitching involuntary motions my body was capable of while floating in ooze or whatever it is that they were storing these bodies in, I would have to make some kind of like, for love of God, please me.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I mean, if I had willed my body to science, I would want to be first, the first corpse in line to yes. to be, you know, to be posed in this macabre way.
Absolutely. I'm a part of this now, you know? I'm part of the World Series celebration. Exactly. So I thought that was beautiful. And yes, in comparison to some of the, like, PG adorable stuff you see in other cities. Oh, we put a baseball hat on the statue on top of City Hall. Oh, that's great. Did you strip the flesh off a corpse and like, put the
Baby Shark? It's Baby Shark versus my God, oh my God.
So
Philadelphia will never stop being hardcore, and it's why I love it.
A horror movie inspired by the World Series. Yes. Well, this wasn't the only thing going on.
You don't want to keep talking about this? Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, we could talk about this for the entire episode. I mean, we might have to split this into two episodes already. But that's, yeah, that was one thing going on at the time. Abington Memorial Hospital put their sign, their little electronic sign outside of the hospital said, hey, they had 441 new Phillies fans born in September. Though everything was just sort of passing through the Phillies filter. Yeah, it was adorable. See, they were death, but also new life. So it is a cycle here in Philadelphia. Chestnut Hill stop on the... Jesus Christ. The SEPTA Chestnut Hill stop, they were giving out soft pretzels in the shape of a Phillies pee.
Don't they do that at the ballpark?
I don't know.
That's incredible. I would eat the hell out of that. I mean, I would always eat the hell out of a soft pretzel, but I mean, in the shape of a Phillies pee, yes.
Just to swing back in the other direction, this was the year that West Philadelphia woman was accused of trying to trade sex for World Series seats.
I had completely forgotten about that.
So did I.
I'm stunned that we don't hear about other people doing that, but I guess they don't really allow that on Craigslist anymore, sadly.
Mm-hmm. Another seamless transition. Some young fifth grade children were in their class in a Warminster Elementary School. They were using Phillies statistics to teach math lessons at this time. As a salute to the Phillies going to the World Series, they were using them to make predictions and they were using them to ask questions. But that was being incorporated into their math lessons at the time using Phillies statistics, which is very cool.
Yeah.
They also began each class with a chorus of "Take Me Out to the Ball Game."
Oh my God. So cute.
According to the Inquirer, and this was a story put together by Jeff Gamage and Michael Klein, they talked about how the Archbishop of Philadelphia and the Archbishop of New York made a friendly wager. And the story starts by saying, oh, they made a friendly wager on the World Series. The loser surrenders his immortal soul. Just kidding.
I was like, oh, well.
That's pretty good. No, they just, you know, one of them was going to, I think the New York guy was sending bagels down to Philadelphia and Philadelphia guy was sending tasty cakes to New York, blah, blah, blah. Mayors did their little thing. Mayor Nutter and Mayor Bloomberg in New York, they both agreed, I think, to wear the other team's jersey and perform a day of service in their city if they lost.
I love how no one really talks about, like, there's no more mayor bets in baseball, right?
I mean, they're just doing stuff like that. I mean, they got to hit like a really nasty one to get it back into the talk. Like, you got to like a real bet, not like a. And then we all gained from the sports fandom that we share as two magnificent American cities. No, it needs to be like a really like gnarly bet that you got to go do something gross or that you don't want to do. Not a day of service, you know, like.
Well, I think it was because it was two East Coast teams, because I'm like, why would the mayor of New York of Washington, D.C. and the mayor of Houston ever communicate at all? Like, I could see, like, yeah, the East Coast cities would do that because I feel like they all feel like they're part of the same area. Like, no one cares about Houston over in D.C. No one cares.
Yes,
and rightly is, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, like we said, Cliff Lee absolutely ran the table in game one and made us think that we were in for a second straight World Series title.
Lee said,
I knew I had my stuff. I was locating my pitches, but I knew with an offense like the Yankees, you could make a couple of mistakes and it can go south really fast. But then reporters asked him, how are your nerves? How were your nerves? And he just said, I'm never nervous. And I believe that. I believe that.
So
about
badass.
Cliff.
It's just so badass. Oh, Cliff. Mm. Those days were something.
I mean, you know, Cliff Lee was who he was, and we've heard that that wasn't great. But it's undeniable that when he went out on the mound like that, it was it's not even like nerves of steel, it was like nerves of sand. Like, he was just fluid, and it was just something else he was going about in his day. And to be like, oh, I don't get nervous, it's just like, I have to like get over my nerves and like enter that right headspace the way Roy Halladay would have to, like, oh, like, leave me alone on game days, leave me alone in the dugout, I'm like in my competitive mindset. And I'm sure to an extent Cliff Lee was the same way, but he just went about it in a way that was like a lot more easygoing.
Well,
you know,
it's like he was doing it because he knew that's what he was supposed to do. He was born to do it, and being on the mound is where he belonged. So how could he feel mm-hmm. nervous about, you know, doing something he knew he could do well?
Yeah. And he did it really well, better than Charlie Manuel thought he was going to do. Charlie Manuel said after the game, I didn't know that Lee was as good as he's been. So,
oh, man, the honesty of Charlie Manuel is, I love him so much.
So in the meantime, yeah, the Phillies offense sprang to life. I mean, hitters one through six all had hits in that game. You know, Jimmy had a hit, Shane Victorino had a hit, Chase Utley and Ryan Howard had multi-hit games. Howard had two doubles, Trouch hit a double, Chase had two home runs as the beginning of his terrifying World Series run. So yeah, this was all in all a dominant game for the Phillies and quite the statement to make in Yankee Stadium. You know, starting on the road. I mean, I can't stress enough how good this win made me feel about the World Series. Because you win that first game on the road, and you're just like, we can lose the next one, and then come home and still feel like we're holding this series in the palm of our hands here. So I don't know about you, but that's typically how I go about this. Obviously, this year's World Series was a twist on that. But yeah, I don't remember feeling any better about this World Series than I did after this game.
Yeah, I felt incredible. Like, Cliff Lee just went out and dominated the Yankees in 9 innings. Like, I couldn't feel anything but, all right, when am I coming in? I need to make sure I plan. When are they going to win? When might mm-hmm. the parade be? I have to start planning, because the year before I had been sick with the flu. Like, they won the World Series. I went to work the next day and lasted 2 hours, came home and spent the next week and a half on the couch. So I really wanted to make it count. I'm like, I have to go. My aunt works downtown, you know, I'll be able to, you know, she'll be able to help me get there. I'm like, I'm doing this. And then it just never happened.
Yeah,
that was
just
my
kind of
fault. That was my fault.
Just kind of evaporated due to us. You know, we blew that.
Yeah,
that for was. The Phillies, so
never. And that's the thing. Never again did I ever assume ever that it was going to happen after that.
I think we can agree it was our fault for believing.
Yep, that's so. Why do you think I have not believed at any point ever again?
That is, that is why we are the way we are. So yeah, game one, everybody feeling really good. Game two, obviously back in New York, Pedro Martinez making, I believe, his second World Series start ever. There was plenty to talk about in regards to this game, and we will talk about Game 2 of the 2009 World Series right after this break. Well, Game 2 of the 2009 World Series, a little less thrilling, you might say, than Game 1. Obviously, we just talked about how confident we were after Cliff Lee threw 9 innings of dominant baseball against a terrifying Yankees lineup. Game 2 saw Pedro Martinez for the Phillies, feeling good, thinking, you know, all right, we're gonna have another story to tell out of this. Pedro obviously had a history with the Yankees. One thing to mention, I don't know if you remember, but you know, Grant Brisby wrote this year, as I believe he does every year, about the commercials of the World Series and like the things that get stuck in your head. Mm-hmm. This was the year of Empire State of Mind getting stuck in your head.
Oh my God, that song.
Because Jay-Z and Alicia Keys performed it for the Yankee Stadium, for the people in Yankee Stadium, before Game 2 of the 2009 World Series, and this was the first time Pedro was facing the Yankees since 2004, which was, you know, something the Yankees took pretty personally. Yankees fans, at least, took pretty personally, given that that was the year the Red Sox came back from a 3-0 deficit in the ALCS and went on to win the World Series. So, yeah, they remembered that. And, yeah, now they were seeing him again. And, yeah, that was pretty much the story that drove this game, was that Pedro was back in Yankee Stadium. And it kind of got this feeling of, like, this is Pedro and the Yankees thing. And the Phillies are just kind of like a third wheel involved in this. I remember thinking that and reading about this game. That sort of that mindset holds up, because that's really, it was between the two of them. And we were just kind of like also there.
Yeah, that it really did feel like that. Like, it's like the Phillies enabled it to happen, because they got Pedro. Now they're in the World Series and we're all watching it. But it was like this, play that everyone was just Phillies fan was just watching, like, ooh, let's see what happens now, but without really having a real role in it at all, other than being the team that made it happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? This World Series was six games long. In four of them, the Phillies had a first inning lead, and Game Two was one of those. I'm sorry. In four of them, the Phillies had a lead before the third inning. Let's say they had an early lead in all of these games. And in this game, they jumped ahead only 1-0 in the second. It was thanks to Raul Ibanez. He had a ground rule double to score Matt Stairs. Matt Stairs had a couple of singles in this World Series, and I just have the hardest time picturing what a Matt Stairs single looks like.
I can't.
I guess he hit some line drives, but mostly, you know, what the hell is that about? AJ Burnett started for the Yankees in this game. He was an irritating pitcher to have to face. I always joked about how weaselly he seemed out there, and that, you know, he had that no-hitter, but it had like 9 walks in that no-hitter. So he was one of those types of pitchers where he was like supposed to be a lot better than he was, and he was always pissing off somebody with the Yankees, and he was always yelling at umpires and never quite pleased. And when he came to the Phillies, he kind of pretty much still was that guy years after this World Series. Obviously liked him a little better at that point. But at this point, yeah, he was still, I think expectations were still pretty high for him. He was one of those Yankees players that was expected to be better just because he was on the Yankees, I think, was part of the obstacles in front of AJ Burnett. But Phillies got an early lead on him thanks to Raul Ibanez. But in the bottom of the fourth, Mark Teixeira hit a home run to tie the game up, and Hideki Matsui, he hit a home run, eventual World Series MVP Hideki Matsui, he hit a home run to make it 2-1 in the sixth. Pedro left. He gave up back-to-back hits to Jerry Hairston and Melky Cabrera in the seventh. And, you know, he made it all the way to the seventh, but he left the game to a chorus of harassment from the Yankees faithful. Chan Ho Park came in, and suddenly you were like, "Why? Where's all that confidence? Where did that go?" And you're like, "Oh, right, yeah." Chan Ho Park's in the game now. This is just a different situation than watching Cliff Lee throw 9 dominant innings against the Yankees. Just suddenly that felt very far away. Felt even further away when Jorge Posada hit an RBI single, and the Yankees wound up winning 3-1. I mean, yeah, it's there was a little bit of controversy. At one point, Johnny Damon hits this line drive to Ryan Howard, who managed to get the ball and throw to second, where Jorge Posada was, and he was tagged and called out. But then the first base umpire said Howard had caught the ball, not fielded it, so there was a double play, and Posada and, you know, future Phillies manager Joe Girardi, they both were upset, saying that's not what happened. ESPN said, "Oh yeah, the ump blew this call for the Yankees. Oh, those poor Yankees." Brian Gorman was the umpire, and he was apparently, you know, people really went after him for this phone call. Obviously, New York media went after him a little more viciously than the Phillies, but you know, look. This is just telling you how cyclical this is. Umpires, I think, you know, we always talk about like, oh, we shouldn't know umpires' names. They shouldn't be making the game about themselves. But I think it's probably unavoidable every year we're going to talk about the umpires in the World Series, because there's going to be a call that's at least questionable, and we're going to look to the guy who made it, and the game's going to be about him for at least a couple of minutes. And in this case, that happened with Brian Gorman. I mean, this is the New York Times wrote on the second questionable play of this game, game two. In the top of the eighth inning, the Phillies' Chase Utley hit into an inning-ending double play, but television replay shows he was safe at first. It was a very close play, and had Utley been ruled safe, the Phillies would have runners at first and third with two outs and Ryan Howard at the plate. So, you know,
wow.
it does change the game. And as this New York Times article concluded, the discussion about expanding instant replay has heated up this postseason, but Commissioner Bud Selig, concerned about delaying games, has resisted. Obviously, we know where we are now with replaying and with replay and how it gets used, and it's not a perfect system, and there's still some work to do there. But
it's still better.
It's still better.
The point is to get it right. Like, yeah, sometimes it takes longer, and sometimes they still don't totally get it right. But the point is to get it right, and it allows them to do that. Thinking about the things that might have changed in the past.
It's painful.
It's really painful, because that could have changed. The Phillies could have lost the World Series by a different margin.
Yeah, I mean, people other than Cliff Lee still had to pitch in this World Series. So, yeah. I remember my Yankees fan friend at the time saying, they're like, I don't think this Yankees team can beat Cliff Lee, but, you know, everybody else, I think they can handle. And he pretty much called he said Yankees in six, and because he figured Cliff Lee was going to pitch two games. I mean, at one point the Phillies were talking about Cliff Lee starting on short rest just because it seemed like he was the only guy the Yankees couldn't handle. But clearly, yes, the umpires, I think, are unarguably going to become the center of attention at some point or another in a series like this, where everybody's all worked up, everybody's eager for blame if something goes wrong. Well, and like, it's pain. Go ahead.
It's an important game. These are the most important games of the year, and the ones where everyone is watching. Like, there are umpiring controversies every other day, you know, but because there are, you know, 15 games a day, you know, they all get diluted. There are 15 games a day in a 162-game season for every team. Like, you're not going to get worked up over, you know, a missed call, you know, that, you know, the umpires, you know, the replay officials still didn't get right. You're going to be annoyed, but there's another game tomorrow. In the World Series, there are seven games, and that's it. You have seven games to win more than the other team wins, and that's it. And so umpiring controversy, you know, umpires become that much more important, because this is it. This is the pinnacle of everything, which is why umpires are chosen, you know, after presumably on merit. For the most part, like, sometimes they are, sometimes they're like, I don't think Joe West appeared in the postseason at all this year, which is a rarity.
Nope. It was great. He did appear in the 2009 World Series.
Of course, however. He fucking did.
Yeah. But I mean, this is, yeah, I think you're right, Liz. But yeah, it starts to feel, you see a story like this when you're looking back and reading about old World Series as much as I do, as much as you do. Mm-hmm. You find stories like this all the time. So, yeah, it is. It's unavoidable.
It's so hard.
And there's no instant replay fix that's going to change that. There's just not. There'll be another. If there's another system, then there's going to be complaints about that system. There's going to be scrutiny about that system. That's probably good, because that's what's going to change it. I mean, look at this point. There had been no video replay in baseball for how long, and it felt like it was never going to happen. Bud Selig resisting it, worried the games are going to get too long. Look at Rob Manfred. He kind of put a pace of play at the front of his priorities for whatever reason.
Not anymore. He has not mentioned that in like a year.
Yeah, you're right.
Really shocking how that stopped being a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost it was a straw man of some kind that really didn't matter all that much. Weird.
Plus, they've totally fixed it, because baseball moves at like a rapid, totally watchable pace at this point and never stops for 20 minutes. I mean, there was a point in this World Series where we were all just standing around watching umpires on the phone, and people were like, are they allowed to review this? And they were like, I don't know. We're doing it.
That's the thing. They didn't. And they were talking about that. Like, there needs to be a way to tell fans at the game what's happening, because, I mean, we didn't know. We knew that they were reviewing things, but the people who were actually there had no clue what was happening. And in the end, they weren't actually reviewing the play. They were talking to the umpire in New York to make sure that they were correct and it was a judgment call and the play is not reviewable, because it wasn't. They didn't actually review it. They were just making sure that it wasn't reviewable.
Which is just a great, great use of time in a baseball
game. I will say, though, it
was like 11:30 at night.
It resulted in Davey Martinez getting tossed out of the World Series. He got ejected from the World Series, and his team won Game 7. Like, that's, you got to wear that as a badge of honor. Like, can we make him a shirt?
I mean, if I may plug myself for a minute, I wrote in response to that something on Fangraphs about the history of ejections in the World Series, and there are some really great ejections in the World Series that Dave Martinez is now a part of that legacy. And to be honest, compared to some of the ones we've seen, or that not that we have seen, but that people in history have seen, his was relatively tame compared to the things that have happened and have gotten. I mean, you kind of had to work at it to get ejected from baseball back in the old, old times. And there was a couple of specific moments that were really just, you know, could have only happened back then and happened to happen in the World Series. So that was, he joins a long, well, not a long, but like a select group of people who've been ejected from World Series games. And, you know, again, you got to work a little hard to get ejected from the championship of baseball as well.
The umpires deserve all the credit in the world because they waited as long as possible to eject Davey Martinez. They took a lot of yelling and angry screaming from him before they finally tossed him out. And I wanted to at least publicly give the umpires credit for that because they waited as long as they could. they tolerated a lot more. Like, I think an umpire like Joe West wouldn't have done that. The umpires who were there sort of understood the gravity of the moment and why Martinez was so upset before they tossed him out of the game and into the history books.
Yeah, he would have relished the opportunity to make that about himself.
Oh, so. God, I hate that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Well, we have run out of time in this episode of Continued Success. We've gotten through about two games of the 2009 World Series, but we're going to split this World Series discussion up into multiple episodes and see where that takes us. We got a long off season ahead of us, so we get, you know, to be able to dwell on hallowed moments from the past, and then, you know, one terrible moment from the past. You know, I think that'll do us all some good as we enter the off season of 2019 and begin to have new things to talk about in that regard as the Phillies build their next team as developments occur in and around baseball. We've got a long winter ahead of us, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it here on Continued Success, as well as on the other podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness and The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. I keep promising a new episode of The Dirty Inning. We've been delayed a little by Trev's health issues. Keep him in your thoughts. He's doing pretty well, according to his own reports. So, you know, we miss recording with Trev, so if you're missing me and Trev talking about old bad Phillies games, don't worry, we'll have another episode coming to you very soon. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family. And we will talk to you more about the 2009 World Series next time on Continued Success.